I'd like to turn to the 46th Psalm, Psalm 46. Psalm 46. Consists of 11 verses. We'll read all 11 verses. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, because of what is stated there in verse 1, will not we fear, though the earth be removed, though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though the waters thereof roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof, Selah. There is a river, the streams whereof shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God shall help her, and that right early. The heathen raged. The kingdoms were moved. He, God, uttered his voice. The earth melted. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge, Selah. Come, behold the works of the Lord. What desolations he hath made in the earth. He maketh wars to cease unto the end of the earth. He breaketh the bow and cutteth the spear in sunder. He burneth the chariot in the fire. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the heathen. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge, Selah. And we have preached 5 or 6 messages that you've heard from this particular psalm. It's one of my favorites. But like all the psalms, it is a song. And from the heading of the psalm, we see that it was for the chief musician. He, of course, would set it to music. It was for the sons of Korah. I believe they were to sing the psalm. And it was to be played upon an instrument, alamoth. It is a song with 3 stanzas marked by the word Selah, which is a musical pause. But more than that, it is a place for you and I to pause and contemplate what we have read. We see that word Selah in verse 3. We see it again in verse 7. We see it again in verse 11. This 46th psalm is a song of praise to God. It is a song of worship. It is a song of adoration. It is a song of reverence to the Lord. It no doubt is a song of faith. As you read through it, you see that it is a song of absolutes, a song of confidence and assurance in God. There is nothing in this psalm about human virtue, human valor, or human wisdom. It is a song all about God. And those are still the best songs today. It begins with God and it ends with God. And the more that our life is about God, the better our life will be. The emphasis of the psalm is the overpowering fact of God. And the more that we live our lives in the reality of the fact of God, again, the better our life will be. Because it is a song all about God, it is a song that is filled with joy. It is a song that is filled with comfort and encouragement. It is a song that ought to embolden the child of God. It is a song that ought to strengthen the faith and the resolve of every child of God. Reading through the psalm, you cannot help but notice that there is a majesty and calm-inducing power in the words of this 46th psalm. The song, no doubt, his all scripture, was extremely relevant when it was written, and its relevance still remains today for you and I. The more that we realize and the more that we are aware of the truth and the reality of this psalm, again, the happier we will be, the more useful we will be, and the more fruitful we will become. We desperately need to live in Psalm 46. We need to daily experience Psalm 46. It is a psalm for you and I to claim. Today we want to center the thought of the message around a statement in verse 10, know that I am God. Know that I am God. And that'll be our subject. But notice that at verse 10, there is a change in the flow of the psalm. In verses 1 through 9, the psalmist is speaking of God. He continues to do so in verse 11. But in verse 10, notice that God is not being spoken of. He's speaking. That's very obvious in verse 10. That ought to grab our attention. There is a change in the flow. It's almost as if, well, it's not almost as, it is. God interrupted the psalmist as he's writing and speaking about God. And then God interrupts and says, be still and know that I am God. Be still. That conveys the idea of surrender. Surrender and know that I am God. That's the best way to know that He's God. Be still speaks of dying to self. That's surrender. Be still and know. That is, be aware. Be aware that I am God. Be conscious that I am God. Take notice that I am God. Recognize that I am God. Sense that I am God. And more importantly than all of that, personally experience that I am God. So verse 10, we have an interruption by God. God speaks. What God says here is in the context of everything we read in the song. Be still and know that I am God. This is the climax of the psalm. Be still and know that I am God. This is the instruction of the psalm. This is the exhortation. This is the application of everything that has been said. Be still and know that I am God. And I pray today that God would interrupt some lives, and that we would hear the very voice of God saying to us, be still and know that I am God. We want to look through this psalm. We could preach a lengthy series on this psalm. We want to first of all consider the circumstances under which the psalm was written. We gather that from several phrases and words that the psalmist uses. In verse 1, we see that it was a time of trouble. He is a very present help in trouble. The word trouble there simply means a tight place, a squeezed pathway. It conveys the idea of pressure. It conveys the idea of unrest and distress, problems, difficulties, inconveniences, trials, griefs, heartaches, misery, suffering, cares, burdens. All of these things fall under the heading of trouble. Also notice, it is in verse 1, in trouble. Big difference between having troubles and being in trouble. To be in something is to be surrounded by it. Just to be engulfed and fenced in. Also notice in verse 1 the words refuge. The very fact that there is a need for such implies danger and risk. Also notice the word strength and help. The very mention of those two words implies personal weakness and inability in the hour of trouble. We see also it was a time of upheaval and disturbance. We see this in verses 2 and verse 3. And in those two verses, the psalmist draws our attention to three images from the world. He mentions the earth, the mountains, and the sea. And these all represent those things in life that we think that we can count on. And he mentions four times in verses 2 and 3 the word though. The word though. In spite of the fact, and then something follows the word though. He says in verse 2, though the earth be removed. That speaks of the visible things thrown into convulsion so that it is entirely changed. And though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, the mountains, that speaks of that which is firm, the most solid and stable of things, being thrown or carried into the sea. And though the waters thereof, that is of the sea, roar and be troubled, agitated, and though the mountains shake, that is, they vibrate and totter and are brought into a state of instability. What we have here is a picture of disruption, a picture of turbulence, a picture of pandemonium, a picture of chaos and change in the most stable of things. And may I say, the most stable of things in the world are going to fail. They're all going to fail. In fact, God designed it that way. We say also, in addition to this, it was, I believe verses 2 and 3 basically describe an earthquake. Now, I can't imagine being in an earthquake. I mean, a tornado, a hurricane, as bad as they are, you might be able to find some place to hide. But when the earth is shaking, where are you going to go? This is a crisis. It was a time of hatred and threatening. In verse 6, we read the heathen, that is, those who know not God. But it's worse than that. It's the very enemies of God. It says they raged. When I think of a person in a rage, I think they've lost their mind. They're at least temporarily insane. The heathen raged. It speaks of their fury, and their wrath, and their outrage, and their resentment toward God's people. All of these circumstances are indicative of an emergency, a crisis, dire straits, a very great difficulty. In light of those circumstances, there are some truths throughout the psalm established about God. There are many truths about God in this psalm. Again, it is a psalm that is all about God. And everything that is said of God throughout this psalm is, again, to be considered in light of the circumstances that we have just referred to. Now, we don't know the specific crisis, nor do we know the specific time of the psalm. But no doubt it was a critical time, and as the psalmist was writing this psalm, he found himself in a crisis. And many times we find ourselves in a crisis. I mean, all you have to do is look around, or watch the news, or read the paper. And we live in times of world crisis. We live in times of national crisis. We live in times of political crisis. We live in times of economic crisis. We even live in times of religious crisis. There's crisis everywhere. And then, of course, there are times when we have a personal crisis. But again, notice in verse 2 and 3, concerning the circumstances, four times we read that word, though. And then a crisis follows the word. Though the waters thereof roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof. So we have though and then a crisis that follows. The psalmist, what he's doing there with that word though, he is drawing our attention away from all of the instability. He is drawing our attention away from all the issues. He is drawing our attention away from all the stuff of this life and all the crisis. And he's drawing our attention to the security that we have in an unchangeable God. He begins with the very fact of God. Verse 1. God is. Now, I've got those words circled throughout my Bible. God is. And I like to just stop and think about that a while. God is. But you'll notice in verse 7, the Lord of hosts is. The God of Jacob is. Verse 5, God is. Verse 11, the Lord of hosts is. The God of Jacob is. Those two words, God is, coupled with the word though, establishes the theme of the psalm, which is simply this: whatever comes to pass, God is. That's the theme. That's the message of this psalm. Whatever comes to pass, God is what and who He is. No matter what. Now, you and I can put anything on the other side of though. But whatever you put on the other side of though, God is. God is. That ought to be a powerful influence in our life. We need to live in the reality of those two words, God is. God is. Let's see who God is from the psalm. Again, the first two words, God is. That word God occurs seven times in this psalm. It's the Hebrew word Elohim, meaning the strong and faithful one. In other words, the strong and faithful one is. Put anything on the other side of though, and the strong and faithful one is. Yes, there are troubles. There are pressures. There are distresses. There are problems. There are difficulties. There are trials. There are griefs. And on and on and on we can go. There are dangers and there are risks. And there are heartaches and there is sorrow. And there is weakness and inability. And yes, we do live in times of great turbulence. And we live in times of chaos and change. We live in tumultuous times. But the strong and faithful one is. Put anything on the other side of though, and God is. You and I need to live that. That needs to be our life. God is. God is. Changes everything. He is the greatest. Verse 4, He is referred to as the Most High. He is the most lofty. He is the most elevated. Again, put anything on the other side of though. Put any battle on the other side of though. Put any problem. Put any need. Put any obstacle. Put any burden. Put any care. Put any concern that you might have. Put any sorrow and any heartache that you might have on the other side of though. And God is still the most prominent, the most influential, and He is more powerful and more elevated than whatever you put on the other side of though. He is the Most High. He is absolute and self-existent. He is referred to as the Lord, all capital letters in verse 7 and verse 11. That, of course, is the Hebrew word Jehovah, simply meaning, I am that I am. Speaking of His absolute, the absoluteness of His being. Speaking of His self-existence. Speaking of His immutability. The earth can be removed. The mountains can be cast into the sea. That which appears stable can be shaken and destroyed. But come what may, Jehovah is. The Lord is. Whatever you put on the other side of though, He is the settled one. He is not shaken. He is the settled one. Put anything on the other side of though. And the fact and the existence and the reality and the certainty of God is never threatened. Jehovah is. He is also sovereign. Verse 7 and verse 11, He is referred to as the Lord of hosts. And may I say, the Lord of hosts is. He is always Jehovah, the absolute, self-existent, unchanging one who rules. He is the ruler of the host. The stellar host, He rules over them all. He rules over the animal hosts. He rules over the angelic hosts. He rules over the demonic hosts. He rules over the human hosts. Whatever you put on the other side of though, He has absolute authority and control, and He reigns supreme. God is. He is also what all of mankind needs. Verse 7 and verse 11, He is referred to as the God of Jacob. Don't hear much about that phrase, the God of Jacob. And notice it is, the God of Jacob is. Who is the God of Jacob? Or what is the God of Jacob? It's the God of all grace. And think of Jacob. It's the God of mercy. It's the God of love. Jacob have I loved. It's the God of patience. All the patience that God had with Jacob. It's the God of long-suffering. It's the God of compassion. The God of Jacob. The God of Jacob is the God of transforming power. God transformed the life of Jacob. In other words, the God of Jacob is the one who can change the ordinary into the extraordinary. The God of Jacob is the God who can repair, the God who can mend, and the God who can overhaul lives. And again, whatever is on the other side of though, the God of Jacob is. Don't ever give up on God. Don't ever cast someone off. Because the God of Jacob is, He can change lives. He can overhaul lives, no matter what's on the other side of though. I want you to notice also this God that is described is suitable to you and I. So far we have seen that He is the Almighty Faithful One. He is the Most High. He is absolute and settled. The One who reigns supreme and has the God of Jacob, He's whatever man needs. And whatever may be on the other side of though, He is all these things. This is a fact. God is. But you will never enjoy God if all you can view Him as, if your view of Him is merely theoretical or intellectual or philosophical, you'll never enjoy Him. God is. But notice that throughout the psalm, in connection with those two words, God is, you find the words our, O-U-R, and us. God is. And then we have our and us. What's your point? That is, who and what God is has a personal application to you and I. If it doesn't, the idea of God doesn't help you much. The strong and faithful one, verse 1, is our refuge in trouble. I'm so glad that God just used the word trouble and did not qualify the word. Because no matter what the trouble, and no matter what the degree of the trouble, and no matter from what direction the trouble may come, and no matter what the duration of the trouble may be, God is, and He is our refuge. No matter what the trouble. Now, a refuge is a place of protection. God is our protection. We need protection from so many things. The chiefest of all being ourselves. God is our refuge. That's a hiding place. I don't have to get in my car and drive 1,000 miles to get away from everything. All I got to do is get alone with God. He's my refuge. He's my hiding place. Are there times that we just want to hide? Oh, yes, many. And I can't think of a better place than God. A refuge is a place of safety. It is a place of supply. A refuge also is a place of availability and access. A refuge does you no good if it's not available. And a refuge does no good if you cannot get to it. So the very fact that God is our refuge says God is available to me in the time of trouble. I have access to God in the time of trouble. Whatever is on the other side of though. And oh, there are many things in this building today that we can put on the other side of though. But whatever is on the other side of though, God is, and God is our refuge. And He is as sure, and the refuge is as sure and reliable as He is. Flee to the mountains if you want to, but the mountains can be cast into the sea. The earth can be destroyed. God is our refuge. Notice, the strong and faithful God is our strength. God is our refuge and strength. Or God is our strength. This is the dynamic and active part of God's presence with us. God is strength, our strength. That's active energy. That's active power operating in our behalf. God is our strength. Means that the force, the might, the stamina, the stability of the Almighty God is exercised in our behalf and is available to us, and we have access to it. We can draw from it. We can depend upon it. And this is true no matter what you put on the other side of though. God is our strength. Put whatever you want on the other side of though. Think of the most terrible thing you can possibly think of. God is my strength. The strong and faithful God is also our help. Verse 1. That speaks of God's readiness in our behalf. He is our help, our assistance, our aid, our support, our sustainer. We need help. There is not a day that I do not get up where I do not need help. Every single moment of every single day, I need help. And God is my helper. The one who can alleviate and bring relief. He is my helper. All people try to help, but I've got news for you. A lot of times people can't alleviate and bring relief. That's the way God designed it. But God is our helper. He's an all-powerful helper. He's an all-knowing helper. He's a present helper. He's a willing helper. He is a sufficient helper. And He is an able helper. And I appreciate the help of men. But I can say today, I can receive absolutely no help at all from men. But God is my helper. God is my helper. And this is true no matter what's on the other side of though. He is a very present help. He's also our source. In verse 4, we read, there is a river. And I believe that that's God. Verse 5 says, God's in the midst of her. God is that river. He is the source. Put anything on the other side of though, and God is the source of joy. God is the source of contentment. God is the source of refreshment. God is the source of rest. God is our source. We have the presence of God. Verse 1 says that He is a very present help. Verse 5, God is in the midst. Verse 7 and verse 11, the Lord of hosts is with us. Everything that is said about God, He is. And He is present with and for us. So here you have the psalmist. He's writing under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit. He has written wonderful things, glorious truths about God. And then all of a sudden in verse 10, he's no longer writing of God. But God speaks. Be still. And know that I am God. In light of our circumstances, in light of who and what God is, we need to hear Him say, be still and know that I am God. There are burdens. But isn't it wonderful? When carrying burdens, God interrupts our life and you hear that voice, be still and know that I am God. There are difficulties. There are problems upon problems. Sorrows upon sorrow. There are temptations. There are battles. There are struggles. There are obstacles. There's valleys. There's times of upheaval. And our needs are innumerable. But oh, what a blessing. When God breaks through it all and says, be still and know that I am God. The truth is, sometimes we forget that. We forget who He is. We just get our eyes on the trouble. We just get our eyes on the sorrow. And we need to open our ears and hear those words. Know that I am God. You, like the Israelites, may find yourself standing before the Red Sea. You may find yourself standing before the Jordan River. But oh, what a difference it makes when that voice comes and says, know that I am God. Know that I am God. You may, like the Israelites, find yourself wandering in the wilderness or standing before the insurmountable walls of Jericho or standing before Goliath. But oh, what a difference it makes when God says, know that I am God. What are those walls when you know that? What is Goliath when you know that? Oh, we need to hear the voice of the Almighty Faithful One. We need to hear the voice of the Most High, the One who is absolute and settled. The One who reigns supreme. The One who is everything that I need. We need to hear Him over and over and over again saying, know that I am God. Know that I am God. You may be in the most difficult time of your life, but I pray that you would hear those words, know that I am God. Just knowing God theoretically or intellectually will not necessarily help you in the hour of crisis. But oh, to hear that voice, know that I am God. You may find yourself like Elijah in a time of grievous famine. Or you might be like the three Hebrews walking in the furnace. Or like Daniel in the lion's den. Or like the apostles on the storm-tossed waters. Through it all, we need to hear those words. Know that I am God. Put anything on the other side of though. And I pray that we would hear those interrupting voice of God saying, know that I'm God. And though we hear those words, there is an emboldening power in those words. That's why the psalmist said, though all these things happen, we will not fear. Know that I am God. There is a calm-inducing power in those words. When you feel the presence of God, and then you hear Him say, know that I'm God. That produces a calm that you can't find anywhere else. It's very difficult
to try to be a calming voice to someone who does not know the Lord. Because that's who they need to hear from. Oh, what a calm that those words produce. May we always be vividly aware and always conscious that we would always perceive and sense and experience what is written in this 46th Psalm. You read through this psalm, and there is a calm confidence in God. Many, many times we need to hear that voice. Know that I'm God. And may we go from here today living in the reality of God. And may we hear God speaking through all the stuff. And by stuff, I'm not referring to material things. I'm just referring to all the things that happen. We might hear that voice. Be still and know that I'm God. It does us well in the hour of crisis or any time to just step back, calm down, be still, and just bask in the presence of the Lord and hear Him say, be still and know that I am God. Brother Larry. Let's all stand. Brother Larry.